Maybe you've noticed, maybe you haven't. Maybe you've noticed this about yourself, maybe you've noticed it about others, or maybe you haven't. But one of the traits that characterize the lives of God's people is personal integrity and honesty. When our daughter, who just had her, 33rd birthday? I was going to say 33rd. 30-something, I don't know. I was only 10 when she was born, so it's hard to remember. When she was little, it was like the first year or maybe the second year when the whole world decided that girls would play T-ball, which, you know, I thought was great. And so now she played soccer and she took ballet and everything else because you know that the little kids aren't supposed to have a dull moment, right? They're supposed to play and be involved in every kind of lesson and sport that there is. But anyway, so Rachel's at T-ball, and you know how it goes at T-ball, you T-ball parents. When they need an umpire, they just recruit one of the parents from the crowd. They don't exactly have, you know, a staff of umpires lined up for the T-ballers. And so I happened to go to the game, and they, you know, kind of put the nab on me. Would you be the first base umpire? And so, you know, I went to the car and got my striped shirt and came back. And so I'm now the first base umpire, and I think I can get a handle on this. It's kind of like watching baseball in slow motion. And besides that, most of the action happens between the tee and the pitcher. Hardly anything happens, which I don't know why they have a pitcher, because he doesn't pitch. But anyway, the game's going along, and all the little kids out there, and it's cute, and it's sweet, and it's kind of fun. And every once in a while, somebody actually gets a hit and makes a run for first base. And I'm standing there at first base, and let me get this straight. Our team was in the field, and the other team was up to bat. Of course, now I'm the umpire. I have to remain neutral, right? It doesn't matter if my precious angel is up to bat or not. I have to. Anyway, so I'm there at first base, and this kid on the other team, he knocks it, you know, clear out almost to the shortstop. And so they're scrambling, and kids are chasing the ball and dropping it and throwing it, and they throw it this way, but it goes that way, and all this stuff is going on. And this little guy is just, he's making tracks, man. Looks like Roadrunner. He's headed for first base, and he makes it to first base, and then he keeps on going, kind of straight out. And then he kind of went like this, and he looked back, and I think his coach is going, run, 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 you know, and the other, his mom and dad are going, don't, and stay put, and he's just kind of wandering around out there. Well, you know, after what seemed like an eternity, you know, probably 30 seconds, somehow the ball made its way over to the first baseman, and the first baseman kind of went over and put their foot on the base and looked around and said, now what? And so all eyes are on me. Now, the rules are, as you know, that if you run past first base, if you run to the right to kind of overrun the base and come back to the base, you're okay. But if you run to the left, even if you stop and wander around like a 7-year-old, technically, you know, you're out. And I had to say, he wasn't making a run for second, you know, but the rules are, and I look at our coach, you know, we're up to bat, and I says, the rules are the runner's out. And I never forget, he looks at me and he says, you're too damn honest. And I thought, well, I guess that's a compliment. I mean, can you be too honest? Now, you know, that's not to say that following the rules in T-ball requires a personal relationship with Jesus, but honesty and personal integrity do characterize the life of one who's given over to the Lord. Now, a pattern of dishonesty, on the other hand, is a symptom of hypocrisy. Dishonesty in the life of a believer specifically, first of all, that's kind of an oxymoron, a dishonest believer. But believe me, it happens. And it does two things. Really, it shows that that individual is self-deceived about their relationship with the Lord. And it gives the unbelieving world the opportunity to criticize and mock the church. As we continue our study here in Romans in the second chapter, now remember that Paul is in the middle here of proving his assertion that all men are equal before God, regardless of ethnic or religious heritage. And starting in chapter 2, verse 17, he makes some strong points about the value of honesty and how it is reflected in the lives of believers. When your life, see, reflects your faith, then you're going to be honest with other people. You're going to be honest with others. In verse 17, remember, this is the middle of a thought, so we jump in. Indeed, you're called a Jew and rest on the law and make your boast in God and know his will and approve the things that are excellent, being instructed out of the law, and are confident that you yourself are a guide to the blind, a light to those who are in darkness, an instructor of the foolish, a teacher of babes, having the form of knowledge and truth in the law. You, therefore, who teach another, do you not teach yourself? You who preach that a man should not steal, do you steal? You who say, don't commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? You who make your boast in the law, do you dishonor God through breaking the law? For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you, as it is written. When your life reflects your faith, you're going to be honest with others. What this passage describes is a life characterized by inconsistency. You say one thing, but you do another. This is if you ever wanted to proof text the idea of practice what you preach, this would be a good spot to turn to. You know, your mouth says one thing, but your life says another. These Jewish Christians were still relying on, as he says here, they have the law, they know the law, they teach the law, you know, they claim to have a special, light from God because of their ethnic heritage, and they rely on that and they cling to it. But at the same time, they don't necessarily practice what they preach. They're guilty of hypocrisy. Hypocrisy, although the word doesn't appear in this passage, the principle does, means to be a pretender. In fact, I totally forgot till just now, but I meant to see if I could come up with a graphic. If you've ever been to the theater, not a movie theater, but where their plays are presented, or read a book on theater, you'll remember that picture of the two masks. I remember it from the opening credits to the Red Skelton show. But then there's dust on me. That's how old I am. But there's a smiley mask, and then there's a sad mask. And those masks represent hypocrisy, the putting on of a mask to pretend to be something other than what you really are. So in that sense, acting in general, pretending, is hypocrisy, except we're not putting on a play here. This isn't a presentation. This is being a phony in life, pretending to be one thing, but in reality, another. Now, those of you that remember the televangelist scandals from the 1980s will also remember how the press and the world took advantage of the opportunity to gang up on the church every night. Nightline, the network news. And really, though, is it any surprise, should we be shocked, that when a TV preacher who weekly or sometimes daily goes in front of millions to proclaim the value of purity and the dangers of promiscuity gets caught with a prostitute, that the whole world would say, they're all just a bunch of hypocrites. Those Christians are just a bunch of phonies. In fact, my friend Bill met a guy, I think he was waiting in line at the oil change place, and he struck up a conversation and says, "What do you do?" And he says, "Well, I'm a Bible teacher. I'm a pastor at a church." And the guy says, "Oh, a sky pilot, huh?" And Bill went, "Well, I guess if you want to call it that, I never thought of it that way, but okay." And the guy says, "I don't go to church." Oh, really? Why not?
Too many hypocrites.
And I remember Bill said the greatest thing. He says, well, you know, we have our fair share of hypocrites, but I don't think we have a corner on the market. You know, hypocrites everywhere, but there are hypocrites in the church, and that's the picture that he's painting here. These people who say one thing, their words say one thing, but their lives say another. As we go through the New Testament, of all the sins that Jesus confronted, hypocrisy was the one that he rarely, if ever, was gracious about. The woman caught in adultery. And what did Jesus say? Where are those that condemn you? Well, they all left. Well, then neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. The tax collector, Zacchaeus, who was, you know, notorious for extortion, for cheating people out of way more than the taxes were supposed to be, and of course he would pocket the difference. And when Jesus came to his house to eat, he says, today salvation's come to your house. Cheater, thief, liar, tax collector, salvation has come to your house. You know, prostitutes, thieves, and all the rest, all received grace, all received mercy, all received forgiveness, all received restoration. But the hypocrites? You brood of vipers, whitewashed tombs full of dead men's bones. Gentle Jesus, meek and mild, pulling no punches, because these were the religious people that pretended a kind of a phony righteousness, and then behind the scenes, and the reality was, when they'd take off that hypocritical mask, they were just as sinful as anybody else. And maybe, you know, sin is sin. There is no small sin, medium sin, large sin. Sin is sin. You either keep the law or you break the law. But I can't help but think that those who mislead people in spiritual matters, well, the Bible tells us, you know, not many of you should be teachers, because you'll be held to a higher level of accountability. Jesus was not soft on hypocrisy. He forgave everybody of everything when they're repentance, when their hearts were sincere, but the hypocrites, he really let them have it. You know, here's a principle that I think is accurate. It's better to be honest about the things you struggle with than to pretend you have no struggles and then get caught in a lie. A couple years ago, we had David Hawking came up and bellowed at us for a couple of days, as David is wont to do. Bless his heart. Love him. Man, he's loud though, isn't he? Never go to lunch with Hawking, because he'll walk in and, praise the Lord! And people stop, you know, and they think, what's going on? Is Jesus coming now? You know, David's a great guy, but I was talking to him once, and he told this story about in Los Angeles, everywhere you go, even if it's just like a half a mile away, you have to get on the freeway for part of the trip. So he gets on the freeway from his house, and he's headed for Big Calvary, Calvary Chapel in Costa Mesa, Sunday morning. And he's driving, and he looks in the car ahead of him, and he notices that there's this really animated discussion going on. From the back, he can see kind of a... And then next thing you know, it's... And signs and hands are flying and heads are bobbing. And they get off the freeway and they're still going, and he's right behind them, you know. And then they turn on to Sunflower, and then they turn into the parking lot of Calvary Chapel. And then they pull into a parking space, and he pulls in about two spaces down and gets out of his car. And they get out and go, oh, it's Pastor David. Hi, David. And he said, and I believe this, he said, you get back in the car and straighten out whatever that was you were fighting about on your way to church. Don't get out of the car and pretend that everything's just peachy when you guys were nearly at each other's throats, you know, in the car, and I saw you. That's hypocrisy. Another story that kind of paints the other side, the good side of that principle about being honest with about the things you struggle with rather than get caught in a lie, was when Mary and I were down in La Center. There was a particular couple that were a regular part of our church, and they were there every Sunday. They were regulars. And one Sunday they weren't there, and, you know, in a little church with 27 or 35 people, you notice when two people are gone, two, and then there are three kids, so it's like, It's like, what, 10% of the church, you know. So the next week, they, you know, there they are, and I saw them before church. We were having cookies and coffee, and I just happened to mention, I wasn't prying, I wasn't trying to get anything out of them. I said, oh, you know, we missed you last week, because I did. We just missed you. That's all I meant. And the wife, I'll never forget this, she says, well, we were on our way to church, and then we got in a big fight, and we just turned around and went back home. And I went, bless your heart. Not because they got in a fight, but because she was honest enough to just say it, to not lie about it or blow it off. She would just told it like it was. She just said, yeah, we got into a hassle driving to church, and we said, well, forget it. We're just going to turn around and go back home. And it's better to be honest about your failures and your struggles than to pretend that you don't have a struggle and then get caught in a lie. See, hypocrisy in and of itself, as Jesus showed, is an awful thing. It's an ugly thing. It's one of the worst sins, you know, that phoniness to pretend to be one thing when in reality you're another. But here's the real problem in verse 24. For the name of God is blasphemed among the Gentiles because of you. When you're a phony, when you're dishonest, when you practice hypocrisy, like those televangelists I talked about, the whole world sees that, and it causes the name of God to be blasphemed, to be spoken against or spoken poorly of. Oh, those Christians, those Jesus people. So what's the solution? I guess that we should talk about that. Real easy. Two words. Be honest. Be honest about who you are. You are not fooling God. He knows your bad habits. He knows your bad attitudes. He knows your heart. He knows the real you. Whether you want to expose that real part of you or not, He knows. So just be honest, because then you won't get caught in that dishonesty and God get the blame, get the bad rap for it. See, this is where grace comes in. As you stop trying to earn God's love or deserve God's love and simply surrender to His grace, you accept once and for all that He loves and accepts you just the way you are when you put your faith in Him. That's that great song that George Beverly Shea sings, I think still sings, at the Billy Graham Crusades. Just as I am, without one plea. Just as I am. The real me. Nothing hidden, because God sees it anyway. No pretending. No saying one thing and living another way. Just being honest with everybody about who I am. And when grace takes hold, then you can be honest about your flaws and your failures. You can take off that mask of hypocrisy and simply be honest with everything about everyone. You know, that's one of the goals of our home groups. And it's a project. It's a long-term goal to establish people in fellowship to the degree that we can trust one another, and on the other side, that we could all be trustworthy enough for people to be honest and be real and share their struggles from the little things to the big things, and know that they're not going to get busted or blasted, but they're going to be accepted and supported and helped in whatever form that help may take, whatever's appropriate. But as long as we're dishonest, that can never happen. Until the mask comes off, that can't happen. And really, there are a lot of reasons people don't go to home groups, and this isn't, Pastor Chuck tells us, never beat the sheep. So one thing you can count on is that if I talk about it, that definitely means I'm not beating you up about it. It means, you know, it's like if I'm truly mad at you, you'll never know. If you think I'm mad at you, then I'm definitely not mad. Because if I was really mad, I'd never let it show. In the same way with this home group thing, I don't mean to beat anybody up, but I'm just telling you as a spiritual principle related to this text, that in home group or fellowship in general, really, when Christian people avoid fellowship, in void friendship, whether it's official, you know, quote, official meetings or Bible studies or home groups or prayer meetings or whatever it is. When people intentionally avoid that, what it usually says, what it screams, really, is that I don't want you to know who I really am. I'm afraid. If you find out who I really am, you'll either chew me out or you'll kick me out or you won't like me. And so I'm just going to keep pretending and keep everybody at arm's length so nobody really knows me. That's just continuing into the hypocrisy. These Jewish believers in Rome, they had all the information they needed, and they were part of a family, literally, a bloodline, that had a special relationship with God. But on the inside, they were just as wicked as everybody else, just as evil, just as selfish, just as prone to lie and cheat and steal, just as dishonest as everybody else, but they pretended because they have a prayer shawl, you know, in a phylactery tied to their arm or their forehead or whatever the Jewish practice was because of that. You know, because they knew what tribe they were descended from. They wore that on the outside and expected people to either accept them or reject them or love them or hate them or whatever based on that, when on the inside they were just as messed up as I am. Just as messed up as you are. They were regular folks. But there was this pretending. If you're or when your life reflects your faith, you're going to be honest with others. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, you're going to be honest with yourself. And maybe that one should come first. They kind of come in disorder in the text, but maybe we need to be honest with ourselves so that we can be honest with others. See, what he tells us here in verse 25 is that merely looking like a believer, having the appearance of a believer, has no value. Verse 25, for circumcision is indeed profitable if you keep the law. But if you're a breaker of the law, your circumcision has become uncircumcision. Now I realize that's kind of a twisted, you know, a twisted jumble of words in English. It's kind of clear, I guess. But he's referring here to circumcision as the sign of the Abrahamic covenant. In Genesis 17, you know, God makes this unilateral covenant. I'm going to bless you, Abraham, not because of anything about you, but in spite of everything about you, you and your descendants. And the sign that we're entering into this one-way agreement is that all the males will be circumcised. Now, the circumcision itself didn't accomplish any great spiritual work in their lives. It didn't make them holy. It showed that they were part of that covenant. So this picture of circumcision as a visible sign of God's covenant with Abraham's descendants, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, on down, you know, to Moses and, you know, the whole family tree there. But it could be any sign. The principle here applies to any sign, any visible sign that you would have indicate that you're a believer. Your little yellow WWJD bracelet. And those are cute. But you know what's funny about that is that, see, the question isn't what would Jesus do? It's what will Jesus do? Because what would puts it in the past tense. But the Jesus that I know rose from the dead, ascended, and seated at the right hand of the Father right now. So if I want to know what Jesus would do or would have me do, I'm going to approach the living Jesus who right now, not back then. And Jesus, what are you going to do in this? You know, but if it's your bracelet or your cross necklace, and I've said this before, you know, jewelry's cool with me. I don't wear any because it makes my skin itch and turn green, but that's not a moral issue. You know, go for it. Pierce everything. You know, I'm okay. It doesn't, you know, that's not the point. But these, you know, these outward symbols, jewelry, or the clothes you wear, you know, a Jesus t-shirt versus a somebody else t-shirt. What's that? My grandson has a t-shirt that says, Satan is a nerd. You know, when you're 13, that's pretty hip. But it even goes so far beyond the things you wear or jewelry. It could even go so far, you know, here the example is circumcision. And it could, in our day, it might be baptism or participation in communion. the two right. See, if we're counting on those, if we're pretending to be God's people and we're coming up front and drinking the cup and we're getting dunked in down at the river or in the tub, you know, and if that's what we think makes us one of God's people, you're not being honest with yourself. If you want to wear, you know, some symbol of your faith or have some visible, that's great, but you got to be honest with yourself. You know the real you, so be the real you. And if the real you is something that you'd rather hide, something that you don't want anybody to see, well, then maybe it's time to let go and let God, as they say, let God change you into what He wants you to be. If there are things in your life, if you're honest with yourself and you look at that man or that woman in the mirror and you go, what a loser, you know. But you're not just self-conscious. I mean, if there's grievous sin practiced, continued in your life, and I can't let anybody know about that. I can't show anybody my magazine collection or my bottle collection or my stash or my, all, you know, whatever it might be that I'm hiding. Well, you got to be honest with yourself because you're not hiding it from God. And what you're doing is you're pretending. You're not being honest about it. Be honest with yourself. Therefore, okay, because of everything he just said and I just explained, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteous requirements of the law, will not his circumcision be counted as circumcision? Now, let's untangle that. Let's just use the words, if a Gentile keeps the requirements of the Jewish law, will not his Gentileness be counted as Jewishness? If an unbeliever lives like a believer, well, you can't really use believer, but if someone who doesn't have that ethnic family tree connection in that sense, if they live like someone who has that relationship, then aren't they as good as have that relationship? And on the other hand, the same thing's true. If someone does have the relationship but lives like they don't, then they might as well not have the relationship. Verse 27, and will not the physically uncircumcised, if he fulfills the law, judge you who, even with your written code and circumcision, are a transgressor of the law? And here's the heart of it. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh, but he is a Jew who is one inwardly. And circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter, whose praise is not from men but from God. See, if they were counting on the letter of the law, and he says, no, it's the spirit of the law. If you have the letter of the law, then live by the letter of the law, and don't say you do when you don't. If you're on the other side of that, you know, even though you don't have the law, but you live according to the law, then you're being honest with yourself and you're being honest with others. Being a believer is something that happens from the inside out, not the outside in. It's about your heart and God's spirit. It's not about carrying your Bible everywhere you go. Now, I know guys that carry their Bible everywhere they go, and it depends on where I go. Sometimes I carry mine. But there's a way too many people who carry it, you know, just like that bracelet or that necklace or circumcision, as if what I have in my hand has any effect whatsoever on who I am in my heart. The fact is, when my heart is changed through the power of God's Spirit, then what I have in my hand reveals that, reflects that, but we get it the other way around. It's not symbols, it's not rituals, it's not formulas, it's not traditions. And when you're honest with yourself, you know that. And now, the last thing, when your life reflects your faith, you're going to be honest with the Lord. Read the first 8 verses of chapter 3. What advantage then has the Jew, or what is the profit of circumcision? Much in every way. Chiefly, because to them were committed the oracles of God. He's talking about the scriptures. For what if some did not believe? Will their unbelief make the faithfulness of God without effect? Certainly not. Indeed, let God be true and every man a liar, as it's written, that you may be justified in your words and may overcome when you're judged. But if our unrighteousness demonstrates the righteousness of God, what shall we say? Is God unjust who inflicts wrath? I speak as a man. What he means is I'm talking like an idiot here. I'm talking from the flesh. And let me read that again with that understanding. If our unrighteousness, if my sin demonstrates the righteousness of God, then is God unjust to inflict his wrath? Certainly not. For then how will God judge the world? For if the truth of God has increased through my lie to his glory, why am I also still judged as a sinner? And why not say, let us do evil that good may come, as we are slanderously reported, and as some affirm that we say, their condemnation is just. He's making a rhetorical question here, asking a ridiculous thing, but what he's teaching us here is that these kind of questions don't reflect faith, they reflect foolishness. Gosh, if God's grace is boundless, and if every time I sin and turn to him for forgiveness, then he's glorified because of his grace, then why don't I just go crazy and bring God all the glory I can? Sure, that's foolishness. And it's a foolishness, here's why it's serious, it challenges God's integrity. God's righteousness requires that he keep his promises. These Jewish Christians in Rome, they were counting on that covenant relationship with Israel and God's faithfulness to that covenant to ensure their salvation. They were counting on that ethnic heritage and that circumcision, but it's a two-way street. See, God's righteousness not only requires that he keep his promises, but it also requires a response to sin. And that's the part that we don't really want to take advantage of or depend on. See, if you're honest with yourself and with God, you won't be able to ignore the sin in your life. You won't be able to live with it. You won't want to live with it. I'm not saying that if you're a real believer, you're perfect. But when you're honest with yourself and you're honest with the Lord and you look in that mirror and you look into this mirror, you know, the Word of God, and you see the sin in your life, you can't just let it slide. There will be a struggle. It may be a battle that you lose for a season. But what is impossible is for the knowledge of God's goodness and grace and the knowledge of your sin to just kind of coexist harmoniously in your life. That can't happen. If you're honest with yourself, you won't want to live with sin in your life. This is what 2 Timothy 2, verses 11 through 13 say. This is from the New Living Translation. I'm just going to read this. This is a true saying. If we die with him, talking about Jesus, we will also live with him. If we endure hardship, we'll reign with him. If we deny him, he will deny us. If we are unfaithful, he remains faithful, for he cannot deny himself. Yeah, God's righteousness requires that he keep his promises, but it also requires a response to sin. Now, to wrap it up, here's what's going on with these people, these Jewish believers. No one ever expected God to deal with sin and keep his covenant and make salvation available to everyone, Jew and Gentile alike. They would have settled for any one of those, or maybe two out of three, but no one was looking for God to punish sin, keep his covenant, and make salvation available to everybody. But that's exactly what he did, exactly what he's done through the cross. See, Jesus is that one, the one God promised Abraham would be a blessing to all the families of the earth. Jesus is the one, he's the first, last, and only one who fulfilled man's side of Israel's covenant with God. Jesus is the one who, even though he, this is 2 Corinthians 5:21, even though he knew no sin, became sin for us that we might become the righteousness of God in him. God dealt with sin. He kept his covenant and he makes salvation available to everybody. And when you're honest with God, honest enough to stop asking the silly questions that challenge his integrity. If I just sin more, doesn't that bring you glory? Shut up. Sit down. Let somebody with a brain talk for a minute, you know? It's just silly, and it's an insult to the Lord, those kinds of questions. When you're honest enough to admit that left to your own devices, your own wisdom, and your own strength, you do not have it all together. When you're honest enough to confess your sin, he is faithful and just to forgive us our sin and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness. Because God has integrity. And that's what he said he will do. Jesus gives life. He gives you life. He knows you and still loves and accepts you just the way you are. Right this minute. Warts, scars, scabs, past, sin. He doesn't accept your sin, but he accepts you because your sin has been paid for on the cross. He gives you his spirit. He gives you the strength to be honest and to live an honest life, one that's free from pretense and hypocrisy. And what does Jesus ask in return for all that? Just your affection, your attention, your devotion, your trust, that you surrender your pride, that you surrender yourself, really that you surrender your life. Honesty, personal integrity are characteristic in the lives of God's people. So as we examine ourselves and our tax returns, just how honest are we? Let's be honest.